Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m., 7 p.m., and 1 a.m. on Mondays, streaming live at richarddugan.com and archiving these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. And we also link to our guests. We'll be giving you that web address here shortly so that you can check out our guest and the information that they have shared with us and expanded upon. And then you can basically go through and again, do your own research and your own investigation. If it resonates with you, we encourage you to follow up on it. If it doesn't, we also encourage you to leave it alone. If it's not working for you, if it doesn't serve you, if it isn't helping you, there's no reason to go down that road. I'm hoping that this program will help you to understand, as what we're doing in some of these programs, trying to develop those new ways of living and these new paradigms for a new world, is an understanding of one another. It's one thing to go within and understand self and to connect with the higher self and to better relate with that still small voice, our intuition, whatever you want to call it. It's another thing to then go outward to work and understand someone else. And having gone through some of the things I've been through in my childhood and early adolescence, as far as the differences that were seen and rather and accentuated upon by others, and of course I speak of the whole issue of bullying and so forth and the disabled. And back in the 60s and 70s, those were the issues we were dealing with. We weren't dealing with a lot of the other subject matter that has come up over the last 40 plus years. And we're going to deal with one of those subjects that is in the forefront of our news today. We're being, so to speak, slapped in the face by it from Washington. And I've shared this many times on the program about my best friend I grew up with from sixth grade all the way through high school, college. We're still best friends, in my opinion. And he came out to me one day and I said, "What do you want me to do with that? You're still my best friend. That doesn't change anything from my perspective. Are you happy?" That's the big question. Are you happy? And he is. And he's gone through some rough times as well. And we all have. But the whole point is, are you happy where you are? If not, move. If you're not happy with what you're doing, then change jobs. If you're not happy with who you are, ooh, there's a big one. There's a big one. And we're going to talk about this in reference to a very interesting titled book. I am fascinated by this, and I think I know where the title comes from, but we're going to ask our guest to describe this for us. The book is entitled, if you're ready for this, folks, Hung Like a Seahorse. And Quinn Fontaine is my guest, and Quinn, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Hey, Richard, thank you so much for having me. This is an absolute delight.
I will tell you that I should tell our listeners that there was a young woman by the name of Kathleen Fontaine, and that is something that we'll talk about as well, and we can't help but talk about it because, folks, Kathleen Fontaine is Quinn Fontaine. Transgender. I am only beginning the process of wrapping my brain around all of this and trying to understand it. Although there's part that I don't really need to understand, I can fully comprehend the fact that if an individual, and I used to sort of comment about this with plastic surgery, Quinn, that I couldn't believe how many, especially Hollywood. I mean, we're so close and everything to Hollywood. Oh, my God, come on. Why can't you just get over it and just be happy with the nose or the ears or the breasts or the whatever it is that you want to change? Just be happy with that. And then I began to realize that if these people weren't happy with the way that they looked, and this wasn't just a whim thing, I live in Hollywood and everybody's doing it. No, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about I'm not happy with the way that I look. I'm uncomfortable. I remember going through dental procedures, and I had cavities up front. And I did not like to smile. And I'm a happy-go-lucky, laughing kind of guy. And it made it tough. But once I got those taken care of, oh, my God, did I feel 1,000 times better.
And free.
And free. How
free to smile. Yeah, free to be your smiley self.
Yeah. How different is that from you? And we're going to focus on you. I was going to say people like you, and where you were growing up. And I have to say, you were a good looking woman. Okay. But so what if you're not happy? What's the point?
Yeah, it made it a little extra challenging. First of all, for your listeners, if anyone's confused, my name is Quinn Alexander Fontaine. I'm a transgender female to male. I'm 3 years into my transition. I'm preoperative everything, but I've been on testosterone for 3 years. My book is called Hung Like a Seahorse, A Real-Life Transgender Adventure of Tragedy, Comedy, and Recovery. And I talk about everything from growing up, knowing I was trans before there was even a word for me. I grew up in Virginia in a small town in the 70s and 80s, and the word transgender didn't come about until the early to mid 90s. I always knew, you know, my verbiage, my language, I always knew I was a boy in the wrong body. And it was really tricky. And that was a time in our culture where no one was talking about anything, anything of substance. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my trans brothers and sisters, they consider their birth name, a lot of them call it their dead name. And if you say it, they get upset. I'm not like that. You know, I was Kathleen for 47 years. Every now and then, if I hear someone yell Kathleen in a crowd, I still turn. It's in me, you know?
Yeah.
I've incorporated that. I've integrated that. And nor do I feel a need to throw away all the photographs from my life before transitioning. But that's different. Some of my trans brothers and sisters don't embrace that part of their life. And that's their journey. It's an individual journey. But with regard to cosmetic surgery and whatnot, it's similar, but it's not at all the same. Being trans is a core root issue. You know, I knew from an early age, like I said, that I was a boy in the wrong body. That means my brain did not match my body. And that's a huge disconnect. And that leads to body dysphoria, body dysmorphia, all kinds of body issues, gender issues. For me as well, you know, I'm a survivor / thriver of pre-verbal childhood sexual abuse. So that was another huge piece of trauma healing I had to do. And for me personally, I consider my transgender identity and my transgender reality growing up a part of my trauma, because it wasn't addressed. There was nowhere I could reach out to. There was no 1-800 phone numbers for people like me. There was really no support. So it was a really quiet and sad reality within myself. My saving grace, one of them, is that I love people. I always have. I love connecting with others. And I found comedy early on. I became the class clown. And not only was that a way to connect with everybody, it was a way, on some level, Richard, it kept me safe. You know, if everyone was laughing and if I could control that to some extent, it made me safe. I was the court jester. No one's going to hate the court jester. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, yeah. I hear you. And we, you know, it is said that humor is one way that we can actually remember things and really connect with things. I mean, people will use humor in their speeches, for example, or maybe teachers in school, and kids will remember because, well, they had a humorous reaction to the subject matter. And it's also said, too, that if you can't laugh at yourself, you know, there's a problem there, and we need to learn how to do that. But in the context of this, and I have to share something. This is because I want to go down this road. I shared when we had the opportunity of chatting before the interview. Mm-hmm. I actually asked you about this. There was a comedian some years ago I was watching, and he stopped his act, or at least that's the perception. He says, look, folks, I can't go any further without sharing this with you. And this was a male comedian. Mm-hmm. And he says, it's gone on too long and I can't hide it anymore. And I really have to share this. I am a lesbian trapped in a man's body. Mm-hmm. And I thought at the time it was rather funny. But now we have this whole new area that we're dealing with, because when I was in, when I moved out of my house and moved into my first apartment, I lived next door to a gay man, and he had people over all the time. He had groups of folks over and invited me as well. He knew I was straight, but you know, he invited me anyway, and he became a good friend. I even invited him over to my family's house for Thanksgiving dinner. Mm-hmm. And he actually took me up on it, and we actually shared dinner as well. But this was in the early 80s, okay? This was like 1981, 82. Mm-hmm. And this was obviously at the beginning of the whole AIDS issue, yeah. As it began to unfold and explode. And then, of course, as I mentioned before, my best friend. But you and I chatted about this, and I thought, well, wait a minute. Is it that you are a lesbian, and maybe that's where the issue is? Or is it literally that you're in the wrong gender body? This has nothing to do with sexuality of an intimate nature. This has to do with your own personal sexual identity, correct?
Yeah, it's very tricky, and don't you know, I'm confused too sometimes. So it's a lot.
I'm glad we're on the same plane.
I'm glad you're so open and we can talk about this. You know, the gender binary used to be male, female, and that was it. Now we're discovering that there's male, female, there's transgender, female to male, transgender, male to female. There's agender, people that actually, one word, agender, consider themselves no gender. There's also gender fluid, people that think they are, or identify, not think that, they identify and feel and know that they are both genders and that they're fluid. So it's expanding and expounding all the time. The thing that gets tricky is that there are two different subjects. You know, being transgender is gender identity. That's gender identity. For me, I'm a guy in the wrong body. You know, I'm still preoperative, so I'm on a trajectory. I'm on that path, and I'm changing that, and that's great. Mm-hmm. The other piece is that, yes, I've only been attracted to women my whole life, but the word lesbian never worked for me because I'm basically a straight man in the wrong body. Mm-hmm. And that is true for me. That's my identity. That okay. matches up. Okay. That when people say that to me, that makes more sense because that's my truth. So we can have lesbians in male form. I mean, but that's each person's identity and each person's understanding of their own, both gender identity and then sexual preference, two separate things. And where it gets tricky again, Richard, is that, you know, the acronym LGBTQ, it's mm-hmm. kind of keeps growing.
Yeah.
Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer. In that sector, lesbian, that's about, you know, sexual preference, gay, sexual preference, bisexual, sexual preference. Transgender is not a sexual preference. That's gender identity, but it's lumped in with this acronym or you know, whatever you call those things, mm-hmm. that implies sexuality. So that's why it gets confusing too.
I think one of the other things that was frustrating for me, and this was in the 80s and early 90s when I was working for a Christian radio station, and obviously there was just there was so much anti going on. I remember in Arizona, where I was living at the time, born and raised in Phoenix, and the state legislature was going to bring to the floor a bill that was going to give basically equal rights, if you will, to gays and lesbians. And those were the two terms we were dealing with. And there was a gentleman, I think his name was David Caligiuri, with something along the lines of ex-gays or something like that for Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking as the public affairs director, you know, we need to discuss this. We need to talk about the pros and cons. And I knew that I could get somebody from the pro side who mm-hmm. was in favor of this bill. So I contacted David saying, knowing he was going to be on the other side, I said, David, I'd like to do a program talking about both sides of this issue and discussing this and the ramifications. Flatly refused, and his statement was to me, I am not going to share and give equal time to the devil. And I thought, really? I was flabbergasted. Now, I never did the interview. I never even did the interview on one side. It just kind of fell, because I didn't want to do just one side. I wanted to show both sides. And then the other thing, too, the big argument was, is this a choice or is this at birth? And growing up legally blind and going through the harassment that I went through that I did not choose, I thought, with the harassment and literally the killings that were going on in this country in the 80s and early 90s of gays by supposed straights or people who were fearful, because that's really where that comes from. The first question that one of the thoughts that came to me was, if it's a choice, who in their right mind would choose it?
Exactly.
That's insanity.
Exactly.
And so I sit here talking with you and thinking, you have got to, you must have been going through, especially when you finally, and I would assume that the term is still coming out and acknowledging it and then sort of sharing it with the rest of the world, that you must have faced your own external demons, shall we say, that I faced as I was going through school with my difference, I'll put it in that way.
Go ahead. No, I just want to say, you know, the only choice, when people use the word choice, the only choice involved with my life around being trans, around being, you know, liking women, around following my truth, the choice is that I'm going to live my truth. That's the choice. Mm-hmm. The choice is, am I going to live my truth or listen to society and be what I'm supposed to be, quote unquote.
Yeah.
I wanted for years to wake up. I would pray going to sleep, please let me wake up in the right body. As a kid, I thought that would be a end-all be-all and it would end my misery. But no one goes to sleep and wakes up in a changed body. It doesn't happen. But that happens for so many of my trans brothers and sisters. We would go to bed as kids praying and hoping and talking to God. Please let me wake up in the right body. This has to be a joke. This can't be real. So the level of pain and the level of self-introspection that you have to do when you're different in any big way to society. I dealt with bullying as well. You know, I get it. But the reality with choice, the only choice involved is living your truth. And getting strong enough to live your truth, and then being even stronger to live it out loud, let other people know who you are. Because the reality is, the more we let other people know our truth, it gives them permission to do the same about their lives. When we tell our truth and our truths, it gives other people permission to do the same. And people are starving for that. I know that to be true. You know, we live in a beautiful world, but people think they have to be, you know, only in this box or this box or this box. And that's not the case. You know, we're one race. We're the human race. Mm-hmm. I really believe we're spiritual beings having a human experience. That right there makes us one. We're all so much more alike than we are different. You know, let's focus on that. And let's heal the planet one person at a time and in small groups and in big groups. Let's really do that kind of outreach heart to heart. And give each other permission to be who we are.
Will there ever be a time in your life, post-trans, if that's the right term, when you will no longer refer to yourself with those terms, that you will be the guy, the man that you've always wanted to be, and now you're just, I'm just a guy, I'm male?
Yeah. You know, I hope so. I also hope that we get to a point in our lives where because that acronym LGBTQ keeps growing.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen some places where it's listed LGBTIQQA. It's got a lot of stuff. So sometimes I just play with it and I have fun with it and try to find the lightness of it and say LGBTIQQ7531, you know, have fun with it. The reality is maybe at some point, hopefully at some point, I am an eternal optimist. Hopefully at some point we'll get to a place where we don't need, it's getting so big and long, we don't need any descriptors. No, that's a great person over there. That's a great individual. Yeah. I love that good person. I love that guy. I love that woman, whatever. But we can let go of the labels because we can let go of the fear. I choose, you know, I pass these days, which is wonderful because that's important to me. Passing meaning I can go out in the world and nobody calls me ma'am. That's triumphant. I feel triumphant. I feel victorious. It still surprises me sometimes when people are like, hey man, you good? You know, and the whole camaraderie between men is a whole new wonderful thing to experience. But I love that I pass. I love that I can go out in the world and people read me and feel me and experience me as a guy because that's who I am. But the reality is I'm a trans guy. And for me, I don't ever want to live stealth, meaning go out in the world and be secretive. Because one thing I can bring forward is people can meet me and have the experience of like, yeah, I met Quinn. He's really cool. He's really heart-based and he's trans. Mm-hmm. And if that helps anybody heal, then that's part of what I can bring forward. You know, and I live a life, I'm very lucky. I live a life, I'm an artist. I can do what I want. And this is one thing that I really believe is supposed to come through me, is transparency. And disarming people around isms, schisms, and ideas about, you know, I'm a recovering crack addict. A lot of people have never met someone that's that open about that. Sex and love addiction. I'm in recovery for all kinds of addictions. I have pre-verbal childhood sexual abuse. I can talk about all of it from a place of freedom and from a place of like, yes, I've done my work and I continue to do my healing work around all of these things in me that still need healing. The reality is it's never too late to heal. It's never too late to be your authentic self if you're not. And I know you are, but so many people out there, you ask them, you know, I know you know this, Richard. You ask them, like, what's your passion? A lot of adults don't even know how to answer that question.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And so many people aren't living fully engaged, heart-based lives, and yet they can. It's never too late. And I know a lot of people are wrapped up in survival mode, whether they're living paycheck to paycheck or they've got credit card debt, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The reality is we need to get out of survival mode and move into thriving mode.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. We even had a gentleman on who produced a film regarding what's called the Thrive Movement. And we're going to have him back again to discuss this. And that's more getting into physics and so forth, but still very pertinent. I find this really interesting, too, because the challenges that I find interesting are, in addition to some of the observations that I had when I was working at this Christian station and the objections to the quote-unquote normalizing of gays and lesbians. And again, this is at that time. And now here we are in the 21st century dealing with the whole trans issue, is the fear that civilization will completely go to hell in a handbasket, will burn up in a fiery ball, and it'll all be over, and we'll all be damned to hell because we embraced this lifestyle. And the observation that came to me, especially when it came to this issue back in just a few years ago, it doesn't seem that long ago, the whole issue of same-sex marriages, and of course now it's, I guess, legal across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Those who are opposed to it, I have one question. Do you think that these couples, same-sex couples, once married, are going to come into your neighborhoods, come into your home, and try to convert you? Is your relationship that tenuous and teetering on disaster that you're afraid that these people are going to come in and try like they're some group that's out to turn the whole world, you know, gay?
Yeah.
I've never understood that. And the same thing now with trans or and again, all of the other terminology that you brought up. Are you afraid that these people, these are people. And by the way, I said this to you. I said this. We've had a number of programs on this station where we've had trans people on and people talking about the subject. And of course, the personal pronouns, so forth. The only personal pronoun I want to identify you with is your name. What is your name? And I will talk to you from that standpoint instead of getting caught up in all of that other stuff.
Yeah.
But it's that seems to be the fear, and yet we're still here, thousands and I don't know if it's 10,000 years that man has been occupying the planet, but we're still here.
Well, the key word is fear, and you just said it. Yeah. You know, there's only two choices in life, fear, love or fear. Mm-hmm. What do you choose moment to moment? Some people say there's only love, and when you're the absence of love is fear.
Yeah.
And with fear comes the hate and the hate crimes and all of that. It's unfortunate, but where I've gotten a lot of solace and comfort is in realizing that many indigenous cultures around the world actually revere their transgender tribe members or their transgender, the people in their community.
Mm-hmm.
That's even true here in with Native Americans. Many Native American tribes that have transgender people in the tribe, they call them two-spirit, and they are revered. They're the shamans. They're the medicine men and women. Mm. And that gave me great comfort, because the reality is we have existed throughout time.
Yeah.
On the whole spectrum of humanity, it has existed throughout time. And I like to think, you know, my understanding, the God of my understanding, I believe we live in a universe, not a biverse or a dualverse, meaning duality. There mm-hmm. is duality, but it's a universe. All is one. And I like to believe, it really makes sense to me, because there's also, there are gay relationships in the animal kingdom. You know, there are all kinds of expressions of sexuality and whatnot in the animal kingdom, on up into humanoids. My belief, my understanding, and what makes sense to me is that it's perfect by design, that God did create gay and bisexual and everything. Part of it is for population control. You know, it's kind of a built-in population control. And the fact that we see it in the animal kingdom speaks to that as well. But I'm not out there looking to be right. I'm out there to be about love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not at all turned off to my Christian friends. I've actually learned a lot about love and compassion from my Christian friends. I have a couple I grew up with in Virginia, and they actually have a transgender son, and we've been in contact, and I've done so much healing with that family. It's been beautiful. What's amazing is, you know, when you walk into a lot of these quote unquote spiritual places, or religious places, it can be spiritual as well. You can feel when the love is forced and fake, or when it's real. You can feel when people are just doing what they think they're supposed to do, but they're actually not connected to it from a loving, fully embodied place. It's just a more cerebral, you know, with quoting different scripture, different religious documents and whatnot, versus a feeling tonality when someone is bringing a real joy, a real love, a real connection to the God of their understanding and life itself. It's a whole different feeling. And I know you know what I'm talking about. So I'd be curious, what was the overall feeling when you worked at that radio station back in the day?
Actually kind of sad, because it was sad because what they were perpetuating was the continued separation of human beings. That to me, and I found that was the sin of separating our members from one another. And members, by that I mean, of course, human beings, the people, the individuals, the bodies. When AIDS first came on the scene, and of course the fear was that, oh my God, you don't want to even come in close contact with anybody who might have it because you would contract it, which of course we found wasn't true. And again, to me, that was the sin. Say, stay away from me. I want nothing to do with you because whatever, you know. I found it so fascinating. And I guess the best example I can have that's not exactly related, but I think it's a good example. There was a movie that came out in the 80s, late 80s, I think it was. And it was based upon a book by the author Kazantzakis. It was called The Last Temptation of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Dealing with the subject matter of Jesus marrying and not dying on the cross and so forth, and having kids and living a normal life.
Uh-huh.
And I remember all of the uproar over the film that hadn't even been released, hadn't even really been filmed. People are saying they'd gotten a hold of scripts and there were things in it that was so blasphemous, and on and on and on and on and on. And of course, the station took the position that, okay, we're going to oppose this, and we're going to run some announcements to oppose this. We don't want it, and you need to stay away from the theaters, and so on and so on and so on. And at one point I thought, what is all of this uproar about? And so I went to the library, I think it was, or I did some research, and I got a copy of the book. I didn't read the whole thing, but I did read the preface.
Yeah.
And I summarize and paraphrase Kazantzakis' preface by saying what he said was, these are just my musings, the what ifs. What if, maybe, Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying this is true. I'm not even saying that it happened. I'm saying what if. It's fiction. It's science fiction, if you want. And I thought, okay, and I wonder how many people have read the preface to the book that the movie supposedly is based upon. So then this still was going on, and the movie came out in the Phoenix area. I went to see it. Now, first of all, from a strictly production and cinematic aspect, not a great film, okay? Not a great, not going to win any Oscars for cinematic excellence. I'm not criticizing the people who produced it, but, you know, it wasn't the greatest of films, but even that was acknowledged. I found nothing blasphemous in the film, but then again, I have a rather open mind to a lot of different things. And of course, I'm hearing all of this brouhaha. And then, of course, I'm also hearing that this film made, I don't know, two or three times more movie than it should have because of the uproar. So the groups at that time who were opposed to it obviously haven't learned from history that the more attention that you put to something, the more attention you put to it, and people are going to focus on it and so forth. The other thing was that when they would go to protest at the movie production facilities in Los Angeles and Hollywood, they had to park their cars in lots, and they had to pay to park their cars. The lots were owned by the movie studio, which means that the monies they paid to protest the film at the movie studio that was producing the film went to the movie studio.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're just, what a disconnect. Now, by the same token, I should be fair. Mm-hmm. If somebody isn't happy about something and they want to express it, hey, more power to you. But I would highly recommend you do some research and investigation. I wasn't about to jump on that bandwagon, just in general, because I can't stand the continual just complaining about something. You got to have something to complain about.
Right.
But the more we complained about it on the air, the more curious I got.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about all of this. And there's a piece of biology that a lot of people aren't aware of. When we talked about this before, check your biology books. Google it. I don't care how you investigate it. Check with your doctor, a gynecologist. We, after the two cells, the egg and the sperm, come together to start to develop the zygote, I don't know at what point this happens. All I know is that at one point, every human being that has ever been, is being, or will be born starts out as a female.
Correct.
And then somewhere the information is transmitted from the DNA, from the chromosomes, from the post office, I don't know. You're going to be male and you're going to be female. Now, that raises an interesting question, Quinn. Was it a mistake that you were born into a female body?
You know, for years and years, I thought it was a mistake. And now I actually think on a soul level that I chose to be transgender, to bring forward what I can bring forward because of that. You know, for so many years, my whole story, and the beauty of it is that I'm not my story. You're not your story. We are not what happens to us. We are not, you know, who perpetrated us and or how we grew up or the bullying or anything. That is not us. That informs us. That informs what, you know, that informs us, it molds us, it changes us, but we get to do with that what we want. And what I'm bringing forward is more integration, more embodiment, and something that only I can, because I am trans. I've been studying both genders and now more genders, but growing up, it was really just the binary. I studied both genders my whole life. I have a really intimate understanding of both genders, and I can bring forward a healing that I really think that needs to happen between the genders. I was in a treatment here in Santa Fe. I came here from Los Angeles 11 years ago to go to treatment for multiple addictions, pre-verbal childhood sexual abuse, and a lot of disconnect and trauma, and I just couldn't do life. And I was in my co-ed group at the time, and it was co-ed, and I was pissed. I wanted to just be in the women's group. They're like, no, you'll you're a sex and love addict. You'll pick the cutest girl in the room and just fixate. And I'm like, you're right. So I was in the co-ed, my co-ed group, my core group. And one day, one of my peers said, yeah, but that's because women have it easier. And he's kind of said it under his breath. And I was like, wait, time out. Do you mind sharing what you just said? So he's like, I don't care. He said it again. Yeah, it's true. Women have it easier. I go, okay. Do all the other men in the room think he's correct? Do you believe that? And they all said, yeah, totally. And then I said, okay, all the women in here, do you think the exact opposite? And they're like, yeah, duh, men have it way easier. I go, this is something that mainstream culture, I don't know who's addressing this. I have never heard anyone address this. If most of society is heterosexual, and yet we're going through life thinking that this is the case, that women who love men are thinking men have it easier, and men who love women are thinking women have it easier, but no one's talking about it, that's like a huge chasm. That's a huge gap. You know, that's a huge place that needs to be explored and healed. And I realized in that moment, you know, I wasn't really doing my deeper trans work yet to around my trans identity, nor was I brave enough to even go there. I was doing the nitty gritty trauma healing work from my childhood that had just come up a couple years prior. But I knew in that moment to store that, you know, mentally and emotionally. I'm like, there's something here for me. There's something here for me because I saw this. I called this out. The facilitators of the group didn't. They let me take over for a few minutes in a very loving way. But I was like, there's something here for me to explore and maybe help heal, you know? And so being able to do that now feels really wonderful. And now I'm an out and proud trans guy. I love who I am. I love that I'm more integrated than I ever have been. I love that I'm more in my body than I ever have been. And Richard, this is so exciting. I Sunday night went to my first rehearsal, and it was an all men's group for an all men's performance. And I had been invited by the director, and I was really scared to go. I was like, I don't know, man. What if they're not happy with me there? What if I don't contribute? What if it doesn't feel safe? You know, just hanging out in what if-ville versus taking action, moving through my fear and going and giving myself the huge gift that was on the other side of that. And it was a hugely transformational evening, not just for me, but for a lot of the other guys there. It was me and 11 guys, and really, really a beautiful and healing evening. And not only was it healing on an emotional level, like I really contributed as a performer. You know, I got up and showed what I wanted to do, and they were all blown away and teary-eyed at the end. And I brought a lot of tenderness forward, and that's one thing I can bring, you know, as a guy. I can bring a lot of tenderness. I don't have to not cry anymore. I'm very, very emotional and very sensitive. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my brothers on the planet have been told since they were little boys, oh, boys don't cry, boys don't feel that. It's not true. We're emotional, you know, we're spiritual and emotional beings having a human experience. And there's a whole range of human expression that's not just for men or women. It's for everybody.
Yeah. It's interesting how I also am in that category as well. I, as a kid growing up, I'd tear up over Little House on the Prairie. And other programs as well, so I'm in that area as well of being sensitive and vulnerable. Although I still struggle sometimes with allowing it to be out there. We're talking with Quinn Fontaine. Quinn Alexander Fontaine, Hung Like a Seahorse, a real life transgender adventure of tragedy, comedy, and recovery. We're going to continue our conversation. I am just excited and thrilled to have him on the program today. And I hope that you're taking notes and understanding that this is a subject that, first of all, it ain't going away, folks. It is not going away. It's something we have to deal with, just like the air we breathe. It, hope to God, it's not going away, or we're not doing anything for anybody. But we are going to do more here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And please, stay tuned.
Stories, I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're talking with Quinn Fontaine. That is the website, too. If I am not mistaken, Quinn, the website, quinnfontaine.com.
You're correct.
And
they can also check out my fan page, Quinn Alexander Fontaine, on Facebook.
Quinn Alexander Fontaine, and it's Hung Like a Seahorse is the title of the book. It's a real-life transgender adventure of tragedy, comedy, and recovery. He's gone through some experiences that he's already shared with us, a level of multiple addictions that, God willing, none of us will ever have to go through. If we're not happy, we need to figure out how to get happy, be happy with who and what we are, where we are and when we are, and so forth. And if we're not, then a change needs to be made. And that's what this program is literally all about. It's those new paradigms. It's finding its choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And if your dream is to be who you really are, well, then you ought to do that. I have to say that the comment you made at the end of the last segment, and especially in regards to men and women comparing their life's existence to the other gender. And I thought, well, wait a minute. If the other side has it better from your perspective, then why don't you become one of those people? Why don't you just change? It's possible today. We can do it. We have the chemicals. We have the medications. We have the whatever it is. We have the surgical procedures. We can change you. We can put you into that other model, okay? As a matter of fact, we could even change your skin color. We can change your nose, your eyes, your ears, etc. We can do a complete, total makeover and make you that other half of the species so that you can be happy and live that life you think that they're living better than you.
Yeah, but with regard to that group, I was the only trans person in that group. It was more about social schisms mm-hmm. of, you know, men thinking women have it easier because they get to express themselves more, or they get to, you know, whatever the issue was for them individually. But I think that's just social programming that needs to be, we need to deprogram.
Deprogram, yeah. I am being facetious to some degree as well.
Because I just want to say, Richard, like, you know, I've known I was a boy in the wrong body since I was about 4, but there was no language for me, and nor could I talk about it with anybody. And I am a pretty open and pretty brave person, but it took me until I was about 40, 47 to get brave enough to actually begin my transition. It is the scariest and most beautiful thing I've done.
Yeah. Oh, I can only barely imagine.
Yeah.
You know, that's a phrase that there's a phrase that that people can use, and it's like, no, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't even come close to imagining what I've been through and so forth. And you're right. I can't any more than I can understand I have a vague inkling of what it must be like to be evacuated from your home because your home is now your two-story home is the first floor is submerged, and you've been evacuated, and you may never, ever get to go back there, and you've lost everything. I was out for 10 days, went to 3 different hotels until we had a friend take us in for the last 2 days. And I was trying to look at that as a working staycation and trying to put a positive spin on it. There's only one, if I'm correct here, Quinn, there's only really one positive spin, and that is to acknowledge who and what you are on the inside and get past the fear to be able to express it on the outside, even if at first it is only verbal. And then as you're going through the process, and I'm curious as to how much longer it will be before you are going to take that next step to where the next time we talk to you, you will be post-operative.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm actually waiting to hear back from the surgeon and insurance for top surgery, female to male top surgery and chest reconstruction. So that's exciting. And then with regard to the lower surgery, female to male, with what I envision for myself, they aren't quite there yet. They're saying, though, within 3 to 5 years, they're going to have something really good for humans. They've done some stuff with mice, but they haven't done it with humans yet. And that's exciting. That, and with regard to everything that's happening in the medical field with technology and everything from stem cells and 3D printing of organs, like it could be very exciting. So I'm in no rush to do that. I kind of want to get the best model possible, if you understand what I'm saying. But I want to just say to you, I just love how open you are. It's really, really wonderful. I look forward to meeting you in person. But since when I started taking testosterone, doing the injections, it was about 3 years ago. September 17th of this year will actually be my 3-year maniversary. That's 3 years of testosterone. Within a month of going on to testosterone, I, for the first time in my life, Richard, I came into alignment with mind and body. And it wasn't overnight huge changes with how I looked. It was overnight huge changes with how I felt inside. I can't explain it other than like, wow, life can actually finally start flowing through me because I'm in alignment. Before, you know, I'd line up every now and then when things were going well, or if I did some good stand-up comedy and got a great response or had a great girlfriend, or, you know, things would flow, but not consistently. And so I finally gave myself the gift of that. And it's been amazing. But the reality is I'm not brave enough. I could not have been at the forefront of this. I could not have been one of the pioneers. You know, I've needed to have people in front of me, my trans brothers and sisters that went ahead of me and were brave and did it. And there are lots of people in my trans community globally who won't pass and maybe never will because they didn't transition till later in life because when they were younger, hormone blockers weren't available. And they're available today for kids. So that kids who know that they're trans and have really great parents and great doctors, they don't have to go through that first wrong, incorrect puberty. Like puberty for me was absolute hell. And that was the first time I was prepubescent right around 11. I got my period at 11. That was just, it was gnarly. And to know I'm a boy, but going through female puberty, that was horrific. And that's when I became, or actually first started having and dealing with suicidal ideation, which I've dealt with on and off my whole life. It's something I still have to manage. But I don't say all of this as a pity party. I don't say all of this for anybody to feel sorry for me. I just want people to know we each have our own unique list of challenges, our unique set of challenges. It doesn't define us. Like I said earlier, it informs us. It informs what we need to do around our self-care. You know, I've got a long list of stuff I have to manage daily. Everything from multiple addictions. I'm in recovery from multiple addictions. I have PTSD from the pre-verbal childhood sexual abuse. So I have to be mindful of what triggers me and what doesn't. And don't get me wrong, I'm not holed up in my house by any means. But there are things I have to manage and be mindful of. I deal with bipolar 1, treatment-resistant severe depression. There's a lot of stuff I have to be gentle with myself about. And I'm encouraging everybody else to do the same with them, with themselves, with their selves, and to be mindful of what is my unique list of challenges that doesn't define me, but is stuff I need to have on my self-care list. You know, if I get too tired, I'm probably going to drink. So I need to make sure I don't get overtired. I deal with insomnia every now, you know, in waves. So I need to up my self-care on those days. And to have an open dialogue about all of this stuff, really without shame. And it's not an overnight thing. I was so shame-based for so many years. And the reality is we don't have to hang out there. You get to if you want to, but you sure don't have to. And you never have to be alone again with whatever your challenges are. We live in a day and age with the internet. We live in a day and age with support groups for everything. There's no reason for us to feel less than and alone and isolated.
And yet, at the same time, the internet has been used as a very cruel tool to perpetuate some of the fear-based postings and so forth, which is really unfortunate. And to that, I would offer to anybody, regardless of what the issue is that you're dealing with and that somebody may very well be harassing you with on social media, close your account. It's that simple. Just close your account. Now, I know there are other features, I'm sure, within some of these programs where you can block this particular individual. But I don't have a Facebook account at this particular point in time. And it's not because I had it and I was being abused and what have you, and I turned it off. I deleted it. I had it shut down. Right. I thought it was real interesting, too, how it took 7 days from the time I deleted it before they actually would. They said, okay, we're going to give you 7 days to maybe reconsider. What am I going to the chair and I'm going to get a stay of execution? No.
Right.
Execute.
Right.
Get it done. It's kind of like some of the programs that you want to delete something. And it asks you if you want to delete it. And I don't remember what version of Windows it was. But then you'd say yes. And then it would pop up another box. Are you sure? Now, I'm glad they have the first box, because there have been times when I've actually selected something, hit the delete key. Oh, no, wait. No. I don't want to do this. And I can stop it. But a second time, it's like,
Then a Facebook crew shows up to your house to do a sit down with you. Are you really sure?
Are you really sure? You're doing an intervention.
Yes, exactly.
How has your family, I don't know if your folks are still alive, siblings, close friends that you had as Catherine, Kathleen.
Yeah.
How have those relationships gone, or have they gone?
You know what? I'm so blessed. They've only come closer. My mom is my biggest fan. She read my book. She was the first one to read my book. She loved it. She's so proud. She's reading it again right now. I mean, that right there, you know, that's amazing. My therapist read it, loved the book. It's like everything else is now icing on the cake. You know what I mean? My sister's been a rock star. She's been a huge fan and one of my best friends. I've got the best friends on the planet. And back to Facebook, you know, I was able to, I was kind of late to the game with Facebook. It came around in 2005, and that was the height of my, my trauma had just come up. And so I was smoking crack and drinking every day, trying to die. So I didn't know about Facebook till after I got out of treatment. Took me a little while to get on Facebook because of my sex and love addiction. I needed to be really mindful about anything I did online. So I got on Facebook probably in 2006 or 2007, instantly started connecting and becoming friends with people I had, what I like to call my original tribe. Outside of my family of origin, my original tribe is the kids I went to kindergarten through 12th grade with in my hometown of Fredericksburg, Virginia, and reconnecting with them and realizing that they always loved me, that I was the one that didn't love myself, was incredibly healing. Facebook for me has been a beautiful and really healing, social media platform. It's been wonderful. But of course, my mom has been on a journey with me my whole life, of course, but with me specifically around coming out around my trauma, you know, asking all the hard questions, dealing with the addiction stuff. It's been really a ride for her. And when I came out as trans, she'd come out from Virginia to visit. I'm in Santa Fe, New Mexico. She came out here to visit and then see my second ever solo show, which is the second show I did, obviously preoperative, or pre-transition. It was called Kathleen Fontaine, The Man, The Mystery, very much a comedy, exploring my transgender identity, my sex and love addiction and recovery from that, and the cultural gender divide as I see it. And saw the show, and in that show at the time, I talked about the fact that I was grateful that if and when I decided to transition, you know, now not only is there a word for me, the word transgender exists, there's also surgeries I can have to be more embodied, to complete my sex reassignment surgery, et cetera, et cetera. But in that show, I said, you know, I'm not, that's not where I am right now. I don't see me doing that. If I do that, it's way off in the distance. And then fast forward 6 months, I decided, no, it's now actually. It is now. I need to do this to save my life, for me to save my life and to recommit to staying clean and sober. I've been off crack for 11 years, almost 5 months, but I was a chronic relapser on pills, pot, and alcohol because of the amount of pain I carried and the amount of disconnect, the amount of body dysphoria. I called my mom and told her, I said, you know, I am going to transition. It's important to me. It's time and all that. And we had the conversation, and I don't know how much of it she really heard with that initial call, but we didn't talk for 2 weeks, which tells me she did hear me loud and clear. And then she called me out of the blue after 2 weeks of not talking, and she's like, she didn't even say hi. She said, are you sure about this? And I knew exactly what she was talking about, but I was going to make her work for it. And I said, well, Mom, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Oh, come on. Well, Mom, seriously, we haven't talked in 2 weeks. We're both very busy people. What do you mean? Well, the gender thing. You know, in between all this like huffing and puffing and sound effects, and she's very Southern and talks a little slower than I'm talking. And I said, yeah, Mom, the gender thing, it's actually called transgender. I've known it my whole life. There just wasn't a word for me, nor was there anybody I could talk to. And yeah, I've done a ton of healing work. I've done a ton of therapy. This is the next piece for me, to be embodied, to be able to someday be happy, joyous, and free. I have to do this. And then more, you know, more Southern sounds on her part, and not Southern sounds, but lots of guffaws and whatnot. And like, well, and then she said to me, she literally said to me, are you sure it's not just because you're perimenopausal? And I said, oh my God, Mom, what? And so she started to repeat it. And I said, no, I heard you verbatim. I heard you loud and clear. But Mom, when you were perimenopausal, did you all of a sudden think you needed to be a man? When all your lady friends, all your teacher friends, when they were perimenopausal, did they start, you know, strapping down their quote unquote breasticles? That's what I call them. Did they start wearing a binder so that they could appear to have a flat chest? Did they explore their walk and their voice, et cetera, et cetera? And she got so frustrated. She's like, well, no. And I said, well, Mom, me either. That's the dumbest question. I love you so much, but I got to hang up before I get rageful. And I hung up, and we hung up the phone. And, it was amazing because within in under 24 hours, but probably 12 hours, I completely crumbled. And I knew later what that was about. It was about I was still so unhealthily corded to my mom. CORDED, corded.
Uh-huh.
I had still so unhealthily corded to her, and I was devastated. I needed my mom's approval. Within 24 hours, I was walking with a cane and in a wheelchair because I couldn't support my body. I had crumbled and become a wounded child, my wounded child self, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't want to keep talking. I don't want to be mindful of the time, but it's a very powerful story, and that we've survived that. And now she's one of my closest comrades and biggest fans.
Has she expressed to you in all of this, and maybe this happened during this same conversation, maybe subsequent to that, her feelings about, putting it in this way, losing her little girl?
You know, she hasn't said that verbatim, but she's alluded to that, even though, you know, we've looked at the photographs together, and anybody out there that, you know, check out my show, I'm just talking about Kathleen Fontaine, The Man, The Mystery. I use 3-foot by 5-foot photographs blown up from my life. And the only time I look feminine is when I'm trying to fit into an LA scene and be, you know, cast as the girlfriend next door or something. Or I do a random, as Richard, as you saw, the wedding dress photo. Mm-hmm. That was actually a comedic photo. I've got a cigar in my hand and whatnot. But I am just all boy in these photos. Not just look, but the energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's made peace with that. She's actually asked herself, how did I miss this? How did I miss this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess it's the same answer as if you were female and coming out as a lesbian. What's to miss? There is nothing to miss. I just didn't put it out there, and I'm putting it out there now. I mean, that's kind of the way I observe this.
That's a big part of it. Yeah. But the other thing is, I really think, and I bet you agree with this, is that people miss stuff because they don't want to see it.
Yes.
So often people put their own overlay of expectation onto things,
mm-hmm.
relationships, whatever. And so we're, you know, removing the veil, so to speak, and, getting real about, no, this is who I am. And, you know, I can take up space on the planet now without apology.
Yeah. I realize that it would take us a little bit longer than we have to go through and take each of these terms, whether it's in that acronym that we've talked about a number of times, and saying, okay, well, L is lesbian and a lesbian is, and we go down this long laundry list of what that is, then and so forth and so on. I think that it would behoove people to, because that's what we like to do on this program, is define our terms so that we understand where we're coming from. And this is again, to me, it's the equivalent, on one level, it's the equivalent, as I mentioned earlier, of being unhappy in your job. I remember in 2008 when that big catastrophe happened globally, if not nationally, and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people lost their jobs. At least that's what we were told. And my first thought beyond the that's a shame. My heart goes out to you because I had a year where I was laid off from four different jobs. In a year, I was like, really? But my first observation after getting beyond that was, I wonder how many of those people, and I speculated 95%, how many of those people hated the job they were in?
And I've
raised that a number of times. At one point, I shared that with someone. They said, oh, not even close to that high. And it's like, well, I don't know. Because I know that statistics, they do studies on a regular basis that say that a certain high percentage of workers in this country are dissatisfied with their job.
Yeah.
And so I thought, because I remember many years ago, I was listening to a CNN story. I don't know if it was CNN. Anyway, it was one of the Associated Press, where I was working at the time.
Yeah.
And they talked about Motorola at the time. This particular Motorola plant, it was laying off or firing. I forget which it was, but these people were not going to have a job tomorrow, so to speak. I think it was like 100 or 1,000 people from a particular plant. And the reason why they were doing it was because they found out that there were some people who were stealing from the company. And their attitude or their mentality, their reasoning, illogically, was that, well, the company doesn't pay me enough, so I'm going to get just compensation by taking this or that or the other. And, of course, this was not just staplers and paper and things like that. We're talking about components to various different things they were building there.
Yeah.
And that ran up a tab of over $1 million.
Oh, my God.
Okay, now I don't know how long it had been going on.
Yeah.
And I thought, you people are idiots. You do not understand the concept of karma.
Yeah.
And it came back to bite 1,000 or more people, because probably they were complicit. They may not have been stealing, but they knew it was going on and did nothing.
Right,
bye-bye,
right.
You're out too. And we do that in many areas of our lives in terms of perpetuating some of these fear-based things. And you made me think early in the program of I probably interviewed him, but I remember reading his books, Gerald Jampolsky's book, Love is Letting Go of Fear.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I still have that copy that I actually recorded. It's really... it's not one of those things as far as, and this is my observation, Quinn, first of all, this is not a choice, okay, any more than you chose to have two arms and two legs. By the way, I don't see anybody reducing their appendages because they're unhappy with having two or adding a third if that were even possible.
Right.
You're unhappy, and it's pretty evident by your history, as you've shared with us, of your multiple addictions. I can only imagine the 12-step program list that you must have had to have gone through. I don't think there was a moment where you weren't in one because you didn't have time for anything else because of all the addictions that you had, you know?
Hey, the only thing I don't have a problem with is gambling. I don't know how that – I got lucky there.
But. You want to bet? No, never mind. this has been an extraordinary conversation, and I'm hoping that we can continue it one day. And, yes, I do hope. And to that end, I'm hoping that maybe one day if you find yourself to the west of New Mexico where you reside now, if you find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
That would be awesome. It's been wonderful, Richard.
Tell us real quickly before we wrap up, and then I have three final questions for you. Tell us about this one-man show that you've got going.
Well, right now I'm working on my next one solo show. It'll be my first solo show as Quinn. It's going to be called Hung Like a Seahorse, the show and tell version. So it's going to talk about a lot of stuff in the book, but in a much lighter way. And I'm going to go into character work. I do a bunch of different characters. So it'll be truth telling and stories from my life. Nitty gritty truth telling with comedy. That's mm-hmm. always my hook. Or my pitch, rather. So I'm excited about that. But first things first, the book is doing really well. It's available on Amazon. It's also available at bookstores. If you ask for it by name, they can order it. And I'm putting together my upcoming book and speaking tour. My real passion, I've done everything from stand-up comedy, sketch, improv, solo shows, et cetera, et cetera. But my real passion and my real calling is inspirational comedy. So it's not just straight-up inspirational speaking, nor is it just straight-up stand-up comedy. It's a combination of both, and it fits anywhere because I want to go out and lead people back to their essential selves, reminding everybody everywhere I go that it's never too late to be your authentic self, whatever that means.
Yeah.
It's never too late to be chasing happy and to be embracing happy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's no time like the present to start that process. I jokingly talk about the Constitution of the United States and the preamble that talks about how we are the God-given right to life and liberty. We get those, okay? No problem. Yeah. That's mine. I've got the documents to prove it.
Right.
But you can't have happiness. You can only pursue it.
Right.
Okay. Well, then start pursuing, because it's right in front of you. It really is. Quinn Fontaine, I thank you so much for sharing so much time with us. And before we let you go, my final three questions for you. I can only imagine the answer to this first question. Who is Quinn Fontaine?
Who is he? Wow. He is a joy-based individual who is continually doing his work to heal his past and be in the present. And he's here to remind you to pay and play it forward.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Oh, I want to uplift humanity through one-on-one connections and group connections of heart-based tenderness, realness, and freedom. I want people to find freedom through interacting with me. So it's upliftment and freedom.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to connect with other people, uplift them, and to remind them to play, that it's never too late to be their essential and authentic selves, and to tap back into the joy that is their life.
My guest has been Quinn Fontaine. You can go to quinnfontaine.com, QUINNFONTAINE.com. We will be linked to your website as well. Pick up a copy of his book, and that is Hung Like a Seahorse. Again, I'm sure most people do chuckle a little bit at that. Hung Like a Seahorse, a real-life transgender adventure of tragedy comedy, as well as recovery. And also, as he's mentioned, he's working on his comedy special, Hung Like a Seahorse, the show and tell version, rated R, no one under 17 admitted without parent. Matter of fact, bring your parents. It might do you a world of good. Thank you again, Quinn, for joining us on the program. And again, we do look forward to having you back again in the not too distant future.
Richard, thank you so much. Really, really wonderful. I love you, man.
Thank you very much. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.